Case number 13-5158, UPMC Brodick et al. Appellants versus Thomas E. Perez, Secretary, United States Department of Labor et al. Mr. Muscemi for the appellants, Ms. Soni for the appellees.
Good morning. Thank you. May it please the court. This case is the latest episode in an effort that the Office of Federal Contract Compliance Programs within the Department of Labor has been pursuing since approximately the late 1990s to extend its regulatory authority and its affirmative action program requirements to hospitals that provide services as part of one or another federal health benefit program to federal employees and military personnel. OFCCP's history in this regard has been somewhat checkered. It had an unsuccessful beginning in the Bridgeport Hospital case in 2003, and now it has led to a formal five-year moratorium announced just in May of this year, a few months after the briefing in this court was completed. It might be worthwhile, I think, to begin with that, just so that the court knows where we stand at the moment.
Right, you're not currently under any impact from this, right?
Well, as I understand it from the government counsel, the government has terminated all of its investigations and evaluations, except for the ones in this case, because the government doesn't want to terminate our investigation because this case is pending in this court. But they're not doing anything with us. They're not asking us for anything. They're not demanding any audit. And whatever this court does in this case, they won't, because they've declared this moratorium, which applies not only to the TRICARE military system. The caption refers to the TRICARE system, but then in the body of the moratorium, which was issued on May 7, it makes clear that for entities like the hospitals here, which serve both military personnel in the TRICARE program and federal employees in the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program, those dual health care entities are also covered by the moratorium. So that's the current situation. And of course, it's the outgrowth of legislation that was passed as part of the fiscal year 2012 defense authorization bill at the end of 2011, in which Congress jumped in when OFCCP tried to exert its authority over TRICARE hospitals before, and Congress passed Section 715 of that bill, which said don't do that anymore. But the OFCCP believes that contrary to what Congress apparently believes, because if you look at the letter that Secretary Perez sent to the both the bipartisan ranking members and chairs of the Senate, the House Committee and House Subcommittee, which was attached to the letter that the government sent into this court on April the 4th, you'll see that the Secretary himself acknowledges that Congress has a different view of what it did in Section 715 than the Department of Labor does. So
Suggesting the case is either moot or alternatively not ripe at this point, or what are you suggesting with all this?
Well, I'm suggesting, Your Honor, that I'm sure the court would want to know what the situation is. It seems like we have a fairly serious matter here, and the court is being asked, I think, to decide it in an abstract, hypothetical situation where no enforcement activity is going to depend on it. So I thought the court ought to be aware of it.
We're aware now, so what do you want us to do with
Well,
that?
I doubt that the case is moot in an Article III case or controversy sense, because, of course, we don't know what will happen 5 years from now. In May 2019, when the moratorium ends, we'll be several Congresses down the road. We'll have a new administration. We don't know what will happen. But I do think that as a jurisprudential matter, the court might wish to stay its hand. I think that, you know, what might make the most sense is to dismiss the appeal and to vacate the decisions below, so that everybody, whatever happens 5 years from now, everybody starts on a clean slate.
And you could make the arguments that you may not have made this time.
Well, I mean, There could be different counsel by then, Your Honor. They might choose to make completely different arguments.
I think they found counsel. I think they found the right counsel now.
Yes. All right. Well, suppose let's then turn to the merits.
Yes. Okay. So begin with the Bridgeport Hospital case. The OFCCP lost in that case because that was within the Department of Labor itself. The case never went to court. Both the administrative law judge and the administrative review board within the Department of Labor rejected the OFCCP theory that a hospital that was providing services to federal employees who were covered by Blue Cross Blue Shield insurance under a Blue Cross Blue Shield contract with the Office of Personnel Management that hospital was a subcontractor for purposes of the OFCCP Affirmative Action Program regulations. And they decided that the Blue Cross Blue Shield contract with OPM did not require any particular hospital to provide services, that the Bridgeport Hospital was not a subcontractor, that it was getting paid for its services under its agreement with Blue Cross Blue Shield, but it was not a Blue Cross Blue Shield subcontractor. Okay, so after the Bridgeport case...
But the facts there are quite different. The nature of the contract is quite different in Bridgeport than in this case.
Well, Your Honor, I wouldn't agree with that characterization. I think that there is a difference. There are certain technical differences between HMOs and insurance companies, but if the court looks at the contract between the Blue Cross Blue Shield entities and OPM and the OPM contract with the UPMC health plan, I think the court's going to be more impressed by the similarities than the differences.
Well, I wasn't.
Well, Your Honor, the fact of the matter is that...
What they're agreeing to do, the HMO is agreeing to do something different than the PPO contracts.
Well, for example, in a Blue Cross Blue Shield PPO, Blue Cross Blue Shield does designate certain providers as preferred providers. The HMO does put together a network of entities that can provide services. But the key, in our view, is that in the contract, and it appears in the joint appendix, I believe, at page 199, the contract specifically defines the term benefits to include not only the provision of services, but also the payment for those services. So the benefits that an HMO is obligated to provide under its agreement with OPM can be provided through payment as well as through arranging that they be provided through some specific provider.
Which was not the arrangement in Bridgeport.
Well, in Bridgeport, as I understand it, Your Honor, the Blue Cross Blue Shield insurers were paying the hospital under their contract with the hospitals for the services that the hospitals provided.
The carrier said he didn't undertake any guarantee of these benefits. That's not what's going on here.
Well, Your Honor, I must be missing the distinction. I don't know about the guarantee, but they were paying for them. And I think from the standpoint of the beneficiary, the participant, that was the important fact.
Well, there is an obligation here for the carrier to ensure that the benefits are given.
And they can be provided by
paying. There's a guarantee that they be given. There was no such guarantee. In fact, there was a disclaimer in Bridgeport. It's just the opposite.
Well, Your Honor, it seems to me that the distinction, and I know this distinction that the government has advocated, is really a tiny distinction to carry the weight of the enormous regulatory machinery that the government wants to throw at HMOs, at hospitals who work within the context of an HMO as compared to hospitals that work within the context of an insured plan. I mean, that seems to me a mighty fine distinction to bear the weight of what is being required here. This program is not a minor imposition at all. And I can only urge Your Honor to take a look at the letters that were sent by the government, by OFCCP, to the hospitals in this case within about a year of the Bridgeport decision. So the Bridgeport decision came down in 2003. A year later, they wrote the letters that started us down this path 2004, and those letters are in the joint appendix, I believe at pages 161 to 181. And you'll see that those letters require each hospital to send in an affirmative action plan for women and minorities under Executive Order 11246, an affirmative action plan under Section 503 of the Rehabilitation Act, an affirmative action plan under the Vietnam-era Veterans Readjustment Assistance Act, an organizational profile, formation of individual job groups covering all jobs within the hospital, statement of the percentage of minority and female incumbents in each group, determination of the minority and female availability for each job group of potential hires, comparison of incumbency to availability, results of affirmative action goals for the preceding year and the current year if 6 months has passed, and so on and so forth. That's just the shorthand, but it goes on for about three or four pages listing everything that has to be provided for each hospital. So it's an enormous administrative burden that turns on a very technical distinction and is inconsistent.
It's an enormous burden, though, that every federal subcontractor has to deal with. Right?
Well, Your Honor, it is true, but the question is, who is a subcontractor?
I understand, but you're talking about the burden, and I'm just responding, well, lots of entities have to deal with that, so that to some extent mitigates the force of that argument, that most subcontractors and federal subcontractors have to deal with it.
Well,
the question really is just here. I understand your point. I was just responding to your point about the burden.
All right. Well, we know that the hospitals who provide services to federal employees under insured plans don't. Mm-hmm. We know that the hospitals who provide services to military personnel in the TRICARE program don't, or at least Congress thinks it has enacted a statute that says that they don't. So we're left with hospitals that are part of HMOs, and the question, and we know something more. We know that the office, there are four key points here that are undisputed. The Office of Personnel Management is the federal agency that has the responsibility for procuring health coverage for federal employees, and it looks to provide a wide variety of access programs for federal employees in a wide variety of forms, all of which are directed to getting federal employees health care coverage. And OPM, unquestionably, the government doesn't deny it, they exclude the hospitals from the definition of subcontractors. They treat hospitals under the Blues and under HMOs the same. They're all those the Blues and HMOs are all called carriers. They, if you look at the regulations that we've quoted, cited in the briefs, you'll see that the term carrier is a defined term in the OPM regs, and it applies both to HMOs and to insurers and a wide variety of other entities, because they don't draw this distinction for purposes of what they're trying to do, which is to provide health coverage. Now,
well, their own regulations have an EEO provision, which does not carve out. It refers to Executive Order 11246.
Your Honor, there is no, we have never argued in this case that there is any doubt that we are subject to the non-discrimination provisions of federal, state, and local law. In fact, we have affirmatively acknowledged that we are, and that we applaud those, and we respect those, and we comply with those. There has not been a suggestion at any time in this case, not an allegation, forget about evidence, not even an allegation, that there was any shortcoming in terms of compliance with the non-discrimination requirements of federal, state, and local law. And we have no problem with that. What we do have a problem with is OFCCP's attempt, in the face of OPM's provision that hospitals do not qualify as subcontractors under any of the various health programs that they arrange, to nevertheless say that this vast machinery of affirmative action programs, record-keeping requirements, audits, investigations, short reviews of how closely you have achieved your affirmative action objectives, etc., should be triggered. We know that Congress, in the Federal Employees Health Benefits Act, expressly authorized the OPM to promulgate regulations. So the regulations that we're relying on, and the ones that we believe should control, are the ones that Congress expressly authorized. Now, by contrast, there is, in our view, substantial doubt about whether there's any legislative authorization for the OFCCP regulations that are at issue here with respect to the Executive Order 11246, minorities and women. There is an express authorization, and we think it's telling that when Congress wants to affirmatively authorize something, it does so, as it did in Section 503 and in the Vietnam-era veterans, VEVRA. So we think that the OPM regulation should control. The EEO portion of it is not at issue, Your Honor. The EEO,
you're saying it's preempted by the 170.15?
Well, Your Honor.
See, I'm not sure how to read that. I understand what your argument is. You're just glossing over it. It isn't clear to me how I read the OPM EEO, which covers all medical providers.
Tell me what provision exactly you're referring to, Your Honor. I'm referring to the subcontractor definition.
There's 22801 and 22802.
Well, 22801 is the overall regulation in the FAR, the so-called FAR, the Federal Acquisition Regulation. But the OPM provisions are passed under an express authorization by Congress. They are part of the Federal Employees Health Benefits Acquisition Regulation, the so-called FEBAR. And there is no suggestion that OPM has somehow exceeded its authority delegated by Congress by promulgating the regulations that appear, I believe it's in Title 48 of CFR, as opposed to 22, which is the overall FAR. So that is, Your Honor has hit on a point that I did want to make. OPM put this out for notice and comment. When they issued their regulations, they focused on the special needs of the health coverage provision of services for federal employees. They received a lot of comments, and they decided that given the structure of this, the unique issues that arise in the healthcare field, and the reluctance to draw distinctions between somebody who gets Blue Cross Blue Shield insurance, somebody who has a PPO and has to pay more if he goes outside of network, someone who goes to an HMO, someone who has some other arrangement, they didn't want the actual provider of health services to be treated as a subcontractor. And I think it's important to recognize that the health plan, the UPMC health plan in this case, is like the insurers in the sense that neither of them provide any medical services. No, the health plan is not a medical service provider. I should mention, we put it in our opening brief, one of these hospitals has been demolished. It's not even in existence anymore. Another one of the three has been merged into a second hospital. And then the only one that is still actively providing services is UPMC McKeesport Hospital. I just wanted to make sure that didn't get missed. But the health plan, the UPMC health plan, like the Blue Cross Blue Shield entities at issue in Bridgeport, doesn't provide any services by itself. It's the hospitals that do, just like they did in Bridgeport. If I could have a little time for rebuttal, I'd appreciate it.
Yes, we will give you time for rebuttal. Thank you.
May it please the court. I'd like to start with the moratorium. When the moratorium became effective in March, we thought it was important to let the court know about the moratorium, not because this case involved a TRICARE subcontractor. It didn't come up on that ground. They didn't make that their basis for objecting to OFCCP's exercise of jurisdiction. It had come to the attention of the agency that McKeesport might have a TRICARE subcontract. Now, the court might think that the agency has a giant database of government subcontractors, but there, that does not exist. So it had some information. It was not from the plaintiffs. And we thought, out of an abundance of caution, we should let the court know that there might be this, this might affect the case.
So if there is, if they do have a TRICARE subcontract, they won't be subject to any of these requirements for at least for 5 years, correct?
Well, we issued a directive that actually, and we referenced it in our letter, and it laid all that out.
But then, I'm talking about the requirements for all the record keeping and what have you. They would not be subject to that for 5 years, assuming they have a TRICARE subcontract, which you believe they do have.
In fact, Your Honor, it appears we spoke prematurely.
Okay.
So in the directive that we that was issued in May, beginning of May, and has been on the website, it spells out exactly what companies with TRICARE subcontracts need to do in order to get their cases administratively closed. And what they need to do, because they have the best information, they have the contract and the agency does not, they just need to take it to the local OFCCP office, present it there, and as long as they don't fall into one of the exceptions, and there are a couple of exceptions, then the OFCCP will administratively close their case at that point. And yes, at that point, if the case is administratively closed on that ground, there are no affirmative obligations during the course of the moratorium. No record keeping, nothing. However, there are some important exceptions, and they're spelled out, as I said, in the directive, and one of them is if a TRICARE subcontractor has another prime contract. So we do not know if they are subcare contractors, TRICARE subcontractors, if they have another prime contract. All of that would be important, but the important point to make here is the case is not moot now. And it is actually, you know, the directive has been out for 4 months and they haven't come to the agency with this information, so it's in their hands.
Another contract with an OPM?
A prime contract with the government, yes, an OPM contract. It's one of the exceptions in the directive. So if I could address some of the issues that were brought up. The Bridgeport...
Do you agree with the other side that there is not a ripe dispute that we ought to be considering?
Well, right now, there is, because we don't know if there...
We have a moratorium.
But the moratorium...
Everyone appears to be excluded except, you say, for some possible exceptions, but you've given notice and no one has shown up to suggest that they might be in that category. Then there is nothing, is that right?
Your Honor, I was not sufficiently clear. We don't actually know that they are TRICARE subcontractors. We thought they were, but they needed to come forward with a copy of their actual contract.
And they haven't.
They haven't.
Right.
So now we're assuming...
There is no current dispute.
About them being TRICARE subcontractors, that's right. So there is a current dispute in this case because this case isn't about TRICARE.
Because the moratorium would only kick in if they were the TRICARE subcontractor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Right. Okay.
So as...
And that's uncertain.
That's uncertain, and it's within their purview to actually have the case closed if they are.
Mm-hmm. And
but
if they are, what do you think? The case could be closed? We should we hold our hand to figure out whether they are?
Your Honor, if they are TRICARE subcontractors and they do not have another prime contract, that's a lot of ifs. But if they show that, I mean, it's not a rubber stamp by the agency. They have to look at this. They have to come forward with that, with that evidence. But if they do not have another prime contract and they do have a current TRICARE subcontract, then the agency will administratively close that case. And that would appear to be the end of this immediate dispute. So if there's no live controversy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we'll see on rebuttal what inquire more about that. Maybe we should turn to the merits. But there are a lot of issues here that we wouldn't have to reach, obviously.
That's correct, Your Honor. I would like to correct the plaintiff's statements about the pay or provide or pay statements in the contract. This is not a correct understanding of the contract that the health plan had the option of deciding that it was simply going to reimburse instead of providing. there are specific provisions in this contract that state that the health plan shall provide the benefits described. That's at Joint Appendix 212. All benefits are provided in full, 335, and you are entitled to the benefits described in this brochure, 280. And when in the contract it lists the benefits are services. They are office visits and hospitalization and surgical procedures and mental health benefits. It doesn't list reimbursement as a benefit. So when then does the contract provide that the health plan will pay? And the answer is in circumstances where it is necessary for the enrollee to file a claim, because of course for the services for which, you know, services will be provided, you don't file a claim for reimbursement. You only file a claim for reimbursement if in these limited circumstances, such as if you're, and this is all in the contract. So for instance, at Joint Appendix 282 and 322, it discusses how you file a complaint for reimbursement for emergency services from non-plan providers. That's not unusual. If you're outside the service area, they're obviously not going to be plan providers, but you've gone and you can submit a claim for reimbursement and the agency will pay it. Another example it gives is on page Joint Appendix 212. It says at the health plan's option, it can pay claims for reimbursement for services that are not on the list of the services that it promised to provide. Now, because it promised to provide those services, the health plan, it can't decide, for instance, that although it has promised to provide for office visits, that it's just not going to do that, and then the enrollee has to go out and find his own doctor and submit a claim for payment.
And this is all an argument for you to get around maybe pejorative, but Bridgeport, right, to distinguish Bridgeport.
It's not a question, Your Honor, of getting around Bridgeport. I mean, Bridgeport actually, that's a good illustration with this case of kind of the parameters. In both cases, you look very concretely at what are the promises that the health provider made to OPM. What is in that contract? And those contracts are different. It's not technical difficulties, like the plaintiff was saying. I mean, it is important. These may be technical, but they're important.
But from the perspective of the hospitals, just taking a little bigger picture, a hospital goes with Blue Cross, then they don't have to do this. They go with the HMO. They do have to do all this. I mean, what sense does that make in terms of the overall regulatory scheme here, do you think? Or is it that just the way it goes? Because it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense from the hospital's perspective, which is why we have this litigation, I assume.
But it's important to keep in mind that this isn't just about hospitals. This, in fact, you know, the plaintiffs argue that this is particularly bad for hospitals, but in fact, this mandate that OFCCP has to enforce the executive order applies across all industries. There are no blanket exemptions for any industry. So what the agency is doing is trying to...
Under Bridgeport, there's an effective exemption for hospitals that are with an insurer, traditional insurer.
But it doesn't... But Bridgeport does not say, if you are an insurer, therefore the regulations don't apply. It says, if your contract is such that you are not promising to provide medical services or, you know, promising to provide a specific service. In this case, it happens to be medical. So if you look at the Bridgeport decision, one of the things that the Administrative Review Board points to is the fact that it says if you, the policyholder, decide you need to be admitted to a hospital, we make no guarantees that you will be admitted to the hospital, and we make no guarantees that you'll receive any services. So essentially there was no promise that was made that the hospital was then providing a service that was necessary to its performance. Here, you know, it's quite different. There are promises, concrete promises, and as the plaintiffs say, the health plan itself has no doctors, so it has to contract with others. And that makes those services that the hospital is offering is agreeing to provide necessary, in fact, you could even say essential, but the test is necessary to the performance of the prime contract. Now, the plaintiffs have also raised the OPM regulation. As we argue in our brief, that regulation was promulgated duly by OPM in its authority to negotiate and administer the contracts of the Federal Employee Health Benefits Plan program. It has nothing to do with the authority to promulgate regulations to enforce the executive order mandate and the mandate in the Rehab Act and also VEVRA. We're talking, it's apples and oranges. It's a definition of subcontractor for OPM's own purposes. And as Your Honor pointed out, the federal acquisition regulations, of which the FEBAR is a part, that where the federal acquisition regulations directly address non-discrimination in government contracting, they point you right back to the Secretary of Labor. In fact, at 48 CFR 22.803, it says the Secretary of Labor has the authority to administer and implement the executive order. And it says that, in fact, at 22.806, it says if a contractor has questions about compliance with the executive order, he's supposed to go to his regional OFCCP office. Your Honor, if the court is in agreement with us that the plaintiffs have waived the arguments about the Procurement Act, I would not go on to address that in my time. But if the court, would the court like to hear about the Procurement Act? Otherwise, I would ask if the court has no further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your Honor, I just have a few points. First of all, UPMC McKeesport is a TRICARE subcontractor. I was told by government counsel that they would not close the investigation. Regardless of whether we produced it or didn't produce it, we are a TRICARE subcontractor, but I was told they wouldn't close the investigation because of this pending appeal. We could produce it promptly. Secondly, we have no other contract with, the hospitals have no contract with the federal government. Indeed, it's a stipulated fact in this case. If you go to Joint Appendix 156, you look at the stipulated facts of the parties, paragraphs 22 and 23, they both say that these hospitals have no direct contracts with the federal government, so that's not been an issue in this case since those stipulated facts were filed long ago. So that does not prevent the application of this directive.
If the moratorium covers the one provider you just mentioned, is there any other aggrieved party, in your view, before the court?
No, Your Honor, because as I said, UPMC Braddock no longer is a functioning entity, and UPMC Southside has been merged into UPMC Mercy. The only way, if the OFCCP somehow were to take the position all of a sudden, which they haven't said, that, well, it sort of transfers, their investigation transfers over to UPMC Mercy, I don't know. But other than that, that's the only thing I can imagine.
But UPMC
McKeesport is the one that's still...
So your suggestion is you assume that the moratorium would cover that entity, but the government has not given you that assurance. Is that what you're saying?
They have said that as long as this case is pending, as I understood government counsel, they said they told me that they would not close their investigation because this case is pending. Ms. Soni.
Well, she just said that it would be administratively closed if you were a TRICARE subcontractor.
Well, we are, and if the government doesn't have a copy of the contract that another part of the government signed with the UPMC health plan, I'm sure we can.
So you could provide the TRICARE subcontract, and
I believe
based
so,
on what
Your
Ms. Soni said, then the case would be over at least for the next 5 years.
We looked into that when we got the April the 4th letter. The April the 4th letter from the government to this court came about a month before the directive actually came out. They wrote to the court because they knew they were working on the directive, and they had written a letter to the members of the House committee in March, and that led to the letter on April 4th to this court. But we, when the directive came out in May, we saw it, and we looked into whether these hospitals are also in the TRICARE, the business of providing benefits to TRICARE beneficiaries.
And just to make that clear, you're definitely a TRICARE subcontractor. McKeesport is definitely a TRICARE subcontractor.
That is my understanding.
Okay. Well, you'll provide the documentation if needed.
But if I understood counsel for the government correctly, it's key that you not also be a prime elsewhere.
And that's why I referred, Your Honor, to the stipulated facts in this case, paragraphs 22 and 23 on page JA-156, in which the parties stipulated that none of these hospitals had a prime contract with the government.
So now, and what you're saying in answer to my question is, that if you're correct in what you're asserting, there is no other aggrieved party before the court.
That's my view, Your Honor. I mean, what I would say, as I said a little bit earlier, we're in a peculiar position right now because, you know, we have an ARB decision, we have a district court decision, and now there's this moratorium, and we think that if the court is inclined, you know, not to, because I don't think there is any, as Judge Edwards says, I don't think there is any really aggrieved party at this point, but we really would not to be stuck with the district court precedent.
We understand. I'm trying to figure out, listening to both sides, and I think we may have to hear from government counsel again, because we need to stop dancing around here. If there are no aggrieved parties, the case shouldn't be before us, I don't think, anyway.
Well, I think it would also be necessary to vacate the opinion of the district court.
Right. You simply, it's effectively mooting out the question whether it's technically a mooting, that's a perfectly appropriate thing to do. If there are no aggrieved parties before the court and the government has said we're not doing anything for at least 5 years, why would we weigh in to 25 incredibly complicated issues?
I think, though, what the government said is we're not doing anything if you come in with documentation which you have not done.
Well, Your Honor, we read the directive too. It is true that there is a sentence in the directive that says if you have one and you want to come in, I've got the directive. I can pass them out to the court. We brought extra copies.
So you learned something today.
I learned that they're interpreting it as a requirement rather than something that the hospitals could do if they so chose. But if this is a problem that they can't assure themselves that the hospital provides benefits in the TRICARE system, we'll address that problem.
So you're saying you're assuring the court that you will provide them whatever it is that the government has now said they want to be provided with.
Judge Edwards, I'm not going to go so far as to say I'll provide the government whatever the government.
No. What they've said today.
As I understand it, we can give them
provide what they have said they needed today. What they've said.
Indeed, you say that's already been stipulated.
And on the lack of any direct contract, that was another point.
Yeah, no prime.
Right, that's already been stipulated.
And on the TRICARE subcontract, just to be clear, you could provide that to them quickly.
Promptly. Yeah. I understand it from our client. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, maybe we should hear from government counsel again.
Thank you.
I have to correct something that opposing counsel has now said several times, which is that a representation about what I said to him. I did not say that the government was not going to close the case in order to intend to moot it. I was, even if they provided information. What I said was the agency was not going to sua sponte, based on its own information, decide that this case should be administratively closed, when it had said, you know, in the directive that for companies that did not receive notice of administrative closure, they should go to the OFCCP office and present a copy.
Well, regardless
of
what happened before in the conversations, as of today, as we sit here, if they provide a copy of the TRICARE contract, and assuming there's no prime contract.
Right, and it's important to note that what the parties stipulated to in 2004 or 2005 about whether any of those hospitals had prime contracts, that may not be accurate today.
Okay, well, but if they represent and that turns out, then there will be no live case or controversy, as Judge Edwards says, with any aggrieved party, right? And then we don't have to weigh in.
That's likely to be correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
We will administratively close if they are TRICARE subcontractors and they do not have a prime contract.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Okay. The case is submitted. Okay. Oh.